Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 101. Exciting times. And I'm joined this evening by Nick, VA Penguin Paleo, Mr. Locke Vincent, who never really came up with an alias, we realized. He's just Locke.
I don't need one.
Yeah, That's right. That was true. He's just Locke, the wizard Locke. And unfortunately, Mike is not able to join us tonight. He is ill with the flu, but he passes
so
his
ill.
Best along. He is hella
He's
ill.
He's the illest.
He passes his best along to everybody and wants to let you guys know that he's being kept company by Fire Emblem on the 3DS.
So.
And he's shooting from both ends.
He may well deed. And with that... What you been playing, Locke?
Speaking of both ends.
That's right.
Dead Space 3. That's a game that we've been playing and reviewing. And I really like the first Dead Space. I really thought the second Dead Space was cool. The third one is fun as well. But it's weird because it has, you know, everyone has noticed, including me, which is I'm a survival horror aficionado, but this inverse relationship between the survival horror elements going down and the action elements going up, in that you're getting more and more ammo, you're getting more and more enemies, more and more players to play with, and it's not as scary, it really isn't, and that has to do with pacing and atmosphere and isolation and all those feelings you get while playing, I think, the first Dead Space, and then second Dead Space, it's more run and gun. And the third one, for sure, it still has some of those things, but really it's you're shooting a ton of stuff, which is fine. It's fun. It's still a fun game. I'm about halfway through, really enjoying it. I've played the whole thing co-op, which is new to the series, and I think it's pretty fun to shoot necromorphs with a buddy. It really is, because they've introduced that weapon crafting system. What do you guys think about that?
I really like it. I think it's a nice feature and it's a nice addition. I think at the same time, it's a way that it can easily break the game, and it does become far more of that action curve instead of the survival. But talk about that maybe a little bit more later, too, when we get into the full sort of depth of things. Yeah.
Yeah, I have an interesting question regarding that survival action thing, and I'll save it for our discussion section.
But this is our tease, so that you keep on listening through all the other parts of it, like our discussion of IKEA furniture. Anyways.
It's a fun game. I think, you know, if you've played through the whole series and you're like, I don't know, like, It's a fun game. Don't get me wrong. Like it is a ton of fun. It's just not the same Dead Space as the first one. And it's a weird trilogy. It's a very weird trilogy. And I understand why they did it, to broaden the horizons. But we can get to that a bit later. I noticed just talking to you guys this week and a couple other people playing it, I have not seen any of Carver, who's the co-op player character. I have not seen any of his story or any of his, like, delusions, which I hear are pretty cool, but I'm just like, the first time that happened, where I was playing with Andrew, and he's like, "Do you see that little kid?" And I'm like, "No, dude, I'm just picking up ammo." Like, he's like, "No, there's a little kid right there." And I'm like, "No, there's not. Let's keep going." So that's pretty cool. I think that's an interesting addition.
And they get more intense later on. There's some crazy stuff, and it actually goes full on, like, Carver is, like, completely hallucinating.
Nice.
And is, like, literally there, I guess, with, like, his hands, like, on his head, doing one of these things. And, like, you're doing something, and then the other co-op player basically has to protect him while
See, that's awesome.
Out.
See, I haven't got there yet, but that's something where you integrate that survival horror into the gameplay somehow, where like that could even happen to Isaac now, because he has that that imprint of those markers. Maybe he starts tripping out while you're playing, and then the other guy has to protect him. It might sound a little gimmicky, but those are the types of things you have to account for, because you've taken away this feeling of isolation.
Yeah, and I think part of the feeling of the game and what I saw Nick when I was playing through it was I've only played it single player so far. I'm only up to about chapter six with the annoying regenerating guys, but it feels like I'm missing out. Like there's a piece of the game there that I'm just not experiencing. I'm not playing. Like it's great. Like I'm having fun with it, but it feels like I should be playing this with someone and having that other person say, "Do you see that little kid over there? Did you see that? Did you?" And I'd be like, "No. What are you talking about? There's nothing there." Like that feels like part of the experience that they really built out for this game that they intended it to have.
Yeah. No. It's pretty cool how they've integrated that, and definitely a welcome feature over, I think, the competitive multiplayer. So, other than that, I sunk a ton of time, and by a ton, I mean like a whole day into being Steve Buscemi on Boardwalk Empire, except prettier. I've been playing Omerta, City of Gangsters, and it's a gangster sim, and who would have thunk, right? But really, it takes place in sort of 75% of the game is this isometric view of Atlantic City, and you take over different neighborhoods, and you start with the campaign, and it's really an extended tutorial that teaches you all the things. Then you can go into sort of sandbox mode, but you're learning how to, you know, take over businesses and turn them into soup kitchens or distilleries, because it's, you know, it's all in Prohibition era, so you need to find these different avenues of business that you can get, get dirty money and then launder that into clean money and that sort of thing. And then after, you know, a certain amount of time or certain scenarios, certain missions, you will go into a turn-based tactical strategy game, which is it's really interesting because if you think the closest thing I can think of is like old school Fallout in that combat in Fallout 1 and 2, where you have that overview of your characters, you're moving them around, they have movement points, they have action points, they have different perks. Some guys are good with guns, some guys are good with melee weapons. And it's really cool because a gang will invade, say, your Ponzi scheme or underground boxing arena, and you'll have to drive them away. And then you take different missions, in a sense, and a mission is like, this person is selling off 30 barrels of beer for this price, and then you wait, you hold on to that, or you put it in your stockpile. You can either sell it off within your businesses, or you try and make a buck on someone who is looking, you know, he's like, oh, I gotta supply beer for my party, so they need a lot of beer right now, and you can sell it at a higher price, and that's how you accumulate cash and money. And that's all well and good, except what I've played. I've played about 10 hours into this campaign, I'll call it, and really, after every single mission, which takes, I don't know, I'd probably say like half an hour to 45 minutes, every single mission, it'll be like, okay, you need to drive out this rival gang, and that'll be your end goal. And when you finish that, it wipes everything. Like, you build all this awesome, you know, part of the neighborhood up, and you've got tons of money and cash and guns and flowing in. You got a really good gang, but then it just, you go to the next area and you don't have anything. You start from scratch, which is that's kind of annoying. It's kind of weird. It's a little shallow.
It's not a good way to build a gangster empire.
No, you're like, oh, I guess I gotta go down the street with $0. But I mean, it's fun. It really sort of harkens back to those old games like Mob Rule or Constructor. This really has no competition. So it's like, I don't know. I want to tell people who like Tropico are should look at this if they like the theme. And I really enjoy the theme, and there's nothing out there, and I think that's why I'm enjoying it. But it's lacking in a lot of parts. Like, the combat is pretty good, but it's very difficult. It's not that tight. The overview, once you play a couple of missions, you notice sort of the shortcomings of it. You're doing the same thing over and over to accumulate money. So, it's fun, but it's definitely not for everybody. It's not as involved as, say, Tropico, I would think, in terms of the sim part of it. But I played a couple missions co-op, which is weird for this type of game. You do combat scenarios, and it's okay, but because it's a turn-based strategy, it's kind of weird. It's like playing like Heroes of Might and Magic, where you're like, okay, you go. Okay, now I'll go. Now you go. And you're on the same team, and I wanted it to be a bit more like, you know, we've got things like SimCity coming out where your city is affecting another one. And I know that's a big thing to ask of someone like Calypso, to be like taking points from like Firaxis, but really it'd be cool to have like one person operating in one part of the city, one person operating in another part of the city, and you're playing sort of whether it's asynchronous or not. It'd be cool to just sort of have those influences on it. So
right, because a guy could like go on a mission, get in trouble, and be like, "Hey, I need your backup support." Yeah,
totally. Yeah,
a big part of Boardwalk Empire. If you watch the show, it's about the different groups like making alliances with each
other. Totally.
And,
like, you could have this whole metagame of diplomacy, and it's just begging for that, and it's just not there. But,
yeah. Yeah.
So
I dug up the other day Evil Genius. Did you ever play that game?
Yeah, yeah. That's another pretty decent sort of indie strategy game.
That was one that, I mean, like, when I dug it up and started looking through it again, I was just like, I mean, I really remember enjoy playing this from, like, a sim perspective.
Yeah.
Because of the, it was a very different take in the art style of it. And I remember trying Tropico and thinking, oh, maybe this will be something similar. And I was just like, nope.
No. And I mean, and there's different degrees, right? You have things like Tropico, but then even further you have like Port Royal, where you're really digging into the economics of it and trade routes. And then you go back and I think I really enjoy sort of this light sim where you're like, yeah, buy low, sell high sort of idea, and you don't really have to get into the really grainy stuff, the grainy details, which it makes it easier. Like, yeah, I'll cut you a deal here, I'll give you, you know, some money there, and yeah, it's cool. I don't know. It's neat. There's a demo out there, and I mean, it's going to go on a Steam sale, and it's worth checking out, I think.
That was Drug Wars on the TI calculator.
That's right. That's exactly.
Back in high school playing.
That's where you learn all your lessons.
Cool. Well, Nick, what you been playing?
So Dead Space 3 as well. I played through the first half of the game, both in single player and co-op. You know, I'll talk more about that later, but I really think that they nailed the whole, this is how you add co-op to a game and still make it fun in single player. Like,
yeah, totally. You know,
the changes are subtle, but they're enough that like it makes it feel worth it. Like it's a cheesy example, but there's a cutscene early on in the game where the ship that Isaac and Carver are on, it starts like exploding basically, and they have to Isaac has to pick up the suit to wear for the first time, right? And a cutscene in single player is just Isaac kind of fighting, and he gets the helmet and stuff like that and puts it on. But in co-op, the cutscene, Carver's there, and he's kind of helping Isaac a little bit. Like, he's just there. Like, the helmet flies past, and Carver
grabs it
back for it, right? And it's just, it's so subtle, and like, they didn't need to do that. But just the fact that they did that those extra couple seconds of having Carver do something in that cutscene shows like kind of the attention to detail that they put for co-op play through the whole thing.
Yeah.
So that really impressed me. Like I said, we'll talk about that more later. I blasted through Aliens Colonial Marines this weekend. It's technically still under embargo. So the one person watching right now,
you will never know.
You ruin it at all for everyone. No.
The review goes live at 4 a.m., so you don't have to wait much longer. But yeah, it's been 5 years. There's 4 studios in the splash screen starting up the game, so it tells you there's a lot of hands in the cookie jar, so to speak. And
so Gearbox, I mean, is this something similar to like Duke Nukem, where Gearbox just took over overall production at the end or something like that?
No, I think it's almost the opposite, because Gearbox started it. I think they probably did the design stuff, and then they started farming out pieces when Borderlands kind of took off, and a lot of their stuff was focused on that, because it's TimeGate did, I think, the multiplayer. I don't even remember all the studios involved. Like I said, there's 4 studio logos there in the beginning. So I blasted through that, and then I played a little bit of Torchlight 2 with you last weekend.
Yeah,
I hadn't fired that up in a long time. So,
and I'm afraid I've far past you in terms of levels. But I got some really good loot for you whenever.
How far are you guys in that?
We were midway through Act 2, maybe? Not even.
Yeah, so we were like level 16, 17 when we started.
We were like 22, I think, when I quit. Something like that.
Yeah, and that engineer is now level 53.
Holy cow.
I have a level 14 Ember Mage alt and a level 5 Outlander and a level 2 Berserker.
Oh, you got the full gambit. Nice.
I'm running the full thing because you keep on finding loot for all these other classes and you're just like, I really want to see what this does. I really want to see what this does. I want to try this out. I bought Torchlight 2 like in the last Steam sale and when it came out, it was just one of those things I kind of put aside, and I think a large part of it was that I had sort of burnout from
Diablo
3, yeah. And then, I mean, Borderlands 2 came out, and I was just like, this is giving me my action RPG fix. And for the game that I wanted Diablo 3 to be, like a better version of Diablo 2, people said it, but it just didn't click with me until I started playing more of it. That's what Torchlight 2 is yeah. Like when I finally got into it and started playing it, looking through the skill trees and the loot and everything like that, I was just like, yeah, this is, you know, the Diablo 2 that I've been wanting to play for some time again. And I've just been really enjoying playing it and going through it all, and it's fun that it's with all the multiplayer options they have, because I was even talking with my girlfriend. I was like, look, see, doesn't this look like a fun game that you want to play? She's like, we can do that. And the kind of, I don't think I'm going to be very good, but if, you know, you want to give it a shot. So I've been playing a lot of that, Dead Space 3, trying still Dark Souls. I still, we have a staff chat now for it, and the thing is, like, you know, the Mike's just like, you know, you don't have to play this game. I was just like, I know, but the thing about the game is, I don't feel it's the game's fault. Like, I don't feel it's the game's fault that I haven't synced with it yet. And I kind of, in the conversation with him and with Andrew some, was kind of, there was a little bit of a click moment for me, I think, like, as a whole for what that game was. I approached it like an action RPG game, and it really can't, you know. I was like, describe the game to me, Mike, and he kind of tossed out something. I was like, okay, throw all that out and describe it again using none of that. And he was just like, okay. And, I mean, and that's just really, like, how I think I had to approach it, was just take everything that you would normally put around that game, from thinking about, you know, min-maxing and yep. loot and everything, and just toss it all out, because that's not at all what that game is. And so I think I'm a better mindset to kind of approach it. So I've slowly been trying to get back into that and try it out again. And I think it's helped as a whole, too, to have gone through some co-op stuff with Andrew and Mike, because seeing it from that perspective, it's definitely, I can see the enjoyment of it a whole lot more. So try that out some more, see what I can get with it. Cool.
Good games.
That's what we've been playing. Mike's been playing Fire Emblem. He likes it. He likes all the tactical RPG.
And it has elements. A co-op mode, apparently, but nobody's gotten a chance
to play it. No one's got a chance to play it, yeah. Apparently DJ didn't want to drive up to Portland to test it out. So.
Oh, that's selfish.
I know. All right, so news for the past week. What's been going on? One of the bigger articles, speaking of Borderlands 2, was an interview that was done with Randy Pitchford over at Gearbox. That was, I don't know, interesting to read through, because the focus of the interview was, is there going to be a level cap increase for Borderlands 2? And, you know, a lot of it was, people are level 50, they want more content, they want to be able to do more, they're at that ceiling, and it's one of the things I brought up in the Hammerlock DLC impressions, was like, you just, if you're level 50, you don't feel like there's anywhere else for you to go. And Randy talked about basically how, well, if we were to do that, we would break your Xbox because our game is awesome. I mean, paraphrase here, but, you know, going into basically that math behind it, everything that they've done to calculate is like, if they were to increase the skill levels, people would do such crazy, insane stuff, the Xbox wouldn't be able to process it and handle it. Which was kind of an interesting take on things of, okay, you know, you could also just say you don't want to do this, or that, you know, you got other projects that you want to focus on. So it was interesting the fact that it doesn't really say that they won't do it, but they don't really seem enthused about going through and breaking their game and having to rebuild parts of it.
I think what he was trying to get at was it's not as simple as just changing some numbers.
Right.
Right. Like he wanted to kind of make clear that, like, okay, look, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to go back and change the way other things work, because we know that once you get past this threshold, you literally, like, you don't have the memory, like your Xbox will crash.
Right.
You know, I'm not familiar enough with the skills, like, down to the nitty-gritty that much that I would know what you could combine to get that.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see that becoming an issue, that, you know, people gaming the system and then...
Well, because they already have, right? I mean, that was one of the patches that they released, was the whole conference call B combo. And there's no doubt about it, for, you know, looking at some of the potential things of like, even with the assassin character, I was like, man, if I had a few more points to be able to do this and this,
right?
I doubt I'd ever come out of his skill mode, right? I could just go around, kill every single guy in melee, and, you know, the only reason I'd stop would because everything's dead. So I mean, I definitely see the point behind the math of it. It was just kind of an interesting way that he approached it, was like, look, this is a lot of work and there's a lot there to do. But it didn't seem necessarily like he was pushing forward with, and we're working on it. It was just kind of more like, it's a lot of work, and we don't know. And it's kind of, you know, that unsatisfying answer to, is this going to happen, or is this something, you know?
Maybe he really doesn't know at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe they, you know, they've obviously tried it, and it wasn't as easy as they thought, so... Now they're like, okay, let's do this and this and this, and, well, crap, this is gonna set things on fire. So now what do we do?
Level 50, them's the rules.
Yeah. Quite possibly. And you know, and one of the things I thought about for even during Hammerlock was, if they do increase leveling cap, they're really hard set now with some of the raid bosses that are level 52, level 53. And I mean, I think it would not be a simple matter of just up the level of the raid boss. Like, I think there'd be more to it than that they'd have to do. So kind of interesting. Hopefully, if there is a season 2 of DLC, there's something to look forward to with that. Speaking of Dead Space 3, as we have, there was that whole supposed glitch with the resource system in the game. A little bit of background, if you haven't played the game yet, the gun crafting system, which we'll talk about more, but is based around gathering resources and building your weapons or building upgrades for them. And it was supposed to be the kind of idea based from their microtransaction system, that you could buy more resources, that these resources would be hard to get. And so, hey, you know, if you want to go and spend some money for these things to upgrade your guns better, we're not going to stop you. Part of that whole microtransaction system, though, is that they actually have in-game resources that you can use to buy those resources. And so people have found ways to kind of glitch the system. There's a resource farming glitch that they found where you can just keep going in and out of a door. I saw a video today of, you can drop your resource bots on one location. Like, you can keep dropping them on there and they'll keep getting a lot of minerals and resources for you. So, you know, people are saying, oh, hey, look, the thing's broken. EA basically came out and said, it's not a glitch, we did that intentionally. Like,
sure,
we built it in so that you could gather resources, so that you get all these things, and however you want to do it is up to you. If you want to spend the time farming those resources, good on you. If you'd rather just pay $1 or $2 or $3, we're not going to stop you from doing that either.
I think it's silly to even have, like the microtransaction thing in the game, like, now that I've played it, like, you know, I think I've got, like, maybe 8 hours into the game. Like, my suit's maxed out at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just from playing basically twice through the first half of the game in co-op and single player. I've gotten enough resources between those two playthroughs that I was able to max out the suit. So, even the way the game is designed, it's easy to get the resources, like, in terms of co-op and using the bots. And it's not like they're very rare. You know, there's maybe one type of resource that's a little bit rarer than the rest.
Tungsten.
Yeah.
And then there's like the whole ration thing, right? Those things are real rare, but once you get enough of those rations, you can literally buy the microtransaction model of resources. It says pay with Microsoft points or pay with these rations, which you get in game. So it just, you know, it's once again, it's the gaming press and community making a mountain out of a molehill with what's there, what something is, without even understanding
what's going on,
how it works. You know?
Well, and the system too is very similar to Mass Effect 3 system, where they had you buy packs or whatever based off of So I mean, you know, and it's, I don't know. It's been interesting to see all that work. I saw Nick. I think the only thing I'd really considered buying was the sarcastic voice modulator for my research
for the bot.
That'd
be awesome.
And that's, you know, and that's a cool thing. Like that's content somebody put work into. You know, it's not like it's a little bit more than like a skin.
Yeah,
right.
Guy, right?
It's got voice acting or something.
It's got entertainment value for you.
Yeah,
I would hope.
Yeah. So. Other news, another kind of big story is Rayman Legends, which was a Wii U exclusive at one point, has now lost its exclusivity and faces delays. But it's more than that. It's not only that it faces delays, it's that the game for the Wii U is done, and they're just pushing off the release of it.
Weird. That's Nick? Too bad.
Not much to say about that. I mean...
Good one, Nintendo.
I mean, everybody I've seen that kind of owns a Wii U at this point is just kind of like, well...
There's nothing to do on Bayonetta 2, right?
Ninja Gaiden 3.
It's kind of normal, I guess, in a sense, from what we've seen in the past with console launches. And, you know, you have that dry spell after the launch titles. But it just seems like it's going to be quite a while with the Wii U.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I found it interesting there was obviously, you know, reaction to this from a lot of people who not only own Wii U, but also who are fans of the Rayman franchise, and particularly after the Rayman Origins game came out, basically getting up in arms at the developer at Ubisoft and saying, you know, how can you do this? And actually seeing one of the developers, like one of the coders or, you know, game designers, post on a forum just saying, you know, we understand, but do you know how frustrating it is for us? Like, we worked, we crunched, we pushed hard, and we had it done. And somewhere else, some suits made the decision to delay all this. And I think that was kind of an interesting perspective for both sides of things, because it's real easy to get lost at the different viewpoints. And it's kind of sucks. I mean, like, you know, I think the Wii U probably could have used that little bit of a boost. I understand why Ubisoft probably pushed it off. Wii U doesn't necessarily have the sales numbers that they were looking for, but would have been a nice boost, I think, for everyone.
I'm just curious to know the reasoning behind having that exclusivity and then it being, whether it was revoked or decided to, for whatever reason, push it to release against Grand Theft Auto 5, which is a great idea.
I think that's an excellent idea. Because I think, you know, they're totally not going to overshadow each other.
But, oh well. I like Rayman. I'm excited to play it on whatever console, whatever system. Just make it come earlier.
And last little news story we have here, and Nick, you can probably talk about this a little bit more, is the Shiny Loot.
Yeah, it's a new indie kind of store that's opening up. Basically, their catch, their thing is all of the games in it get tags assigned to it, and they're using it for filtering and finding stuff. And it's kind of an intelligent tagging system. You kind of pick, I think it's four tags, and then like category and a genre and for your game to be in, so you can find stuff a lot quicker.
Nice.
For us, for our site, it makes sense because obviously co-op's a big piece of that, and it's easy to just click the co-op checkbox and all the co-op games that are on there kind of show up, and then you can kind of filter down further. If you want co-op space games, you can click those two checkboxes and it shows you what it is. And it's kind of funny because you think this kind of filtering would have almost been available already on some of the other stores, but it's always much higher level.
Yeah.
So you're stuck sorting through stuff, and as you know, as an indie developer, trying to get exposure to the exact people who you know would like your game is tough. So this kind of makes it easy. I mean, I hope these guys do well. Obviously, BSA's on there.
Nice.
So I wanted to do
little
well,
little plug. Yeah.
What are the tags on BSA?
I think I did cooperative, top down, challenging.
Stop whining about the challenge.
Mid mission upgrades.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
So it's kind of interesting that so they have that kind of granularity with their stuff.
That's cool.
So.
Now is the service itself though isn't like a sales store, right? Because they go through and it's not designed to.
I mean, you can purchase stuff through them,
right?
But it's whether it's a Steam key you're getting or it's, you know, the actual executable to download or whatever. It's
just more a way of making that easier to get all those pieces together rather than having to go to this side or to this side or go over here to try and track this down.
Right. It's just, it's an easier way to find the stuff. I mean, I'll be curious to see how they do their marketing. And apparently they're going to have a pretty big marketing push once it finally goes live. It's just they're doing a kind of a closed beta right now to get some feedback from folks and things like that. But you know, there's indie PC game area is pretty crowded, so anything to help out there is good. And maybe it'll inspire some, you know, inspire Steam and inspire good old games and whatever else to do some similar stuff too.
And that's shinyloot.com.
Yeah, shinyloot.com.
Cool.
Yeah, it's the one thing that's always frustrated me with going through Desura and trying to find stuff.
Desura, I mean, it's a crapshoot.
Good luck.
More like, don't Sura.
Exactly. All right.
I got nothing. I got absolutely nothing.
All right, let's talk about games a little bit more, but specifically let's talk about Dungeon Land. Let's talk about playing co-op in Dungeon Land.
Dungeon Land, it is the new Smash TV. That's the what I wrote.
That's the final verdict.
I think that's the best way to describe it. It's a modern Smash TV.
That's a fair. I would call that very accurate. Yes.
Even as going along as like the difficulty, right? Smash TV is renowned for its ridiculous difficulty, and Dungeon Land is difficult, especially initially when you don't really have much. So basically there's three classes to pick from. There's the wizard or the mage, you have your rogue, and you have like a warrior guy. And then each class has like sub classes of it. So the mage can do ice or fire or electricity. The rogue can use a bow or a gun or throwing knives. I don't even know what the warriors. I know
is
the warriors subclasses were.
I don't know. I've only played as the mage so far, and I heal and buff and protect.
I'm gonna guess like sword and shield and two-handed weapon.
Probably something like that. I haven't put much time in with him, but the classes work really well together.
Yeah, there's lots of synergy.
So basically, there's three or four levels, kind of random guys and placements and stuff in them, and you go through and you're killing guys and they're dropping shiny objects and you pick up the shiny objects and you go forward. It's pretty chaotic. There's some goofy looking characters and names and stuff. Like the game doesn't really take itself seriously. It's kind of like a comedy in a sense. There's Locke, I think our first time playing, we fought this giant mooing cow.
Giant cow, yeah.
Yeah. It was like, what is going on? But it's single player wise, we both agreed it's the AI guys are pretty much worthless.
Oh, you need three peeps together, three humans.
Luckily, the game, the co-op stuff, especially for like a PC title, it's pretty flexible. It's got local and online and combo co-op support, so you can have like two people on your PC and play online with someone else. It's got a server browser. So I had no problem playing with random people, and I actually made it through all the levels with randoms.
Holy cow.
Which was good. Yeah.
I could barely pass the first one.
It's once you get a few items under your belt, once you get enough money and you get a few items and little modifiers, like you can get things like maybe it's a damage modifier for enemies like less than 30% health. You do critical hits, or if
I had my guy jacked up on healing stuff. It was like, right. I could resurrect 50% faster, and yeah. on critical hits, I'd heal you guys, so.
Yeah, and so there's different things that, when combined together, really work well. Especially, we didn't even mention that there's a whole elemental aspect of it.
Oh, that's
so,
right.
Like, the mage, if you say you're casting a firewall, the rogue can throw his knives through the firewall, and then they'll catch fire and do fire damage to things.
Yep.
So kind of like combine the stuff in Magicka where you could...
It's a very light method of it, but it still helps.
We stumbled upon that sort of by accident.
Yeah, we did.
I was just throwing firewalls out just because that's all I do, and then Nick was just throwing knives. And it's like, oh, fire knives, great. That's awesome.
So the game has some issues. There's some glitchy things with like triggers and events not happening and stuff like that, but it's a $10 title, and it's... I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah, it's worth your time for sure. It's definitely worth your time.
Yeah,
it's good. So, good little romp through a theme park.
Yeah, a bloody, bloody theme park. Oh.
Like, what was it? The unicorns and teddy bears in Diablo 3.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, Dead Space 3. You know, we've touched upon a little bit here and there, but really kind of diving in deep with this and more. All
right. So here's what
your
I want
question.
To... My question, okay.
The time is now. If you've been waiting,
we're gonna talk survival horror versus action, and what defines survival horror. So, what I've heard is like, okay, the thing I hated the most in Dead Space and Dead Space 2 was I didn't have enough freaking ammo.
Yeah, but
right.
Yeah, but that's what makes the survival horror. That's game.
But why.
Right.
Why is that scary? That
no,
make
it's
scared. That
it makes you. It makes you. Cognizant of your, you know, it limits you. It limits you by design in that you know you have 5 bullets left. You're like, I got to make these count instead of I have 100 bullets and I can just go boom, 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 boom. So it's like taking this psychological thing and forcing the player to, you know, consciously pick their shots. And I'm talking specifically to gunplay here because if you think about it, when you're have 4 dudes collapsing in, or even just one guy that pops out of a vent, your initial reaction is to like freak out and just shoot everywhere. And I think it's a cool way to make you like take a moment and breathe and actually go like, okay, in order to succeed, I have to make sure I hit the guy with this. Just like I think that emulates real life, like
right,
that emotion.
Because the whole thing that they always talk about is the adrenaline rush that you feel, and you have to fight the adrenaline rush. So I wouldn't say that it was a matter of scary so much as a matter of balanced tension.
Sure.
It
can also bite you in the ass, because if you get to a spot where you're like, I have a big, you know, set piece or a big boss coming up, and I have 4 bullets, it's like, thanks, game. Like, great. What am I supposed to
do?
So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just get pissed. Like, I'm just like, really? Like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I don't know. I've never found... Like, I'd say, like, the Dead Space games, in terms of horror, are on par with, like, the original Half-Life was.
Oh, I don't know about that, man. Dead Space 1 is, like, up there with Event Horizon in terms of what it does.
It is. Like, I would agree. Like there's genuinely moments in Dead Space 1 that made it more of a horror game than any of the other ones.
I was more scared at like the original fear with Alma and some of her stuff.
Yeah.
Than I was in I think any of Dead Space. Like it's like they're using gimmicky things to try and scare you, like grotesque stuff and things like that. Like Dead Space 2, the end where there's like that shrilling scream it's like it's not really scary, it's I don't know, the first time you hear it you're like oh, and then you're like okay now it's annoying, shut the hell up.
It's all about, you know, like I said before, it's all about pacing and sound design, and those go hand in hand, because if you hear something off in the distance or through a vent and you're like, oh shit, I don't want to keep going. So that affects how you play. You're taking a single step at a time with your gun up slowly, and that builds that tension.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I can see how the game has increased in terms of the action it has, and like Dead Space 1 was very isolationist and very, you know, slow and methodical and stuff like that.
And you're describing the reasons for why they did it. It's because people don't like that. Like a mass audience does not like that stuff. So that's why they've shifted it with these next two games. And then you see it in most in the third where, yeah, I have literally just had firefights in Dead Space 3. There's never been a part where I'm like, oh man, what's going to happen next? Like, I am blowing stuff up. I have a shotgun with a sword on it and a grenade launcher with, like, I don't know, a sniper rifle on it, and I'm just guns ablazing the whole time.
Yeah.
It's mental.
I think the default difficulty in Dead Space 3 is way too easy.
Normal?
Even on solo, I think there's way too much ammo and stuff. Compared to like Dead Space 2 and Dead Space 3, like the ammo difference is like, I'll never run out of ammo.
Well, that's because they've stocked they're like pinatas. They've stocked the necromorphs with tons of goodies. You just stomp on them and smash them and pick apart their limbs.
Well, and you also have the ability now with a lot of that stuff that you find to craft it at the benches. I mean, like, when you can go and you can make your own ammo or you can make your own med packs, it's kind of, you know, well, why do I even really need to bother maybe picking some of this stuff up? But, I mean, it's true. I started the game on normal because that's how I started off, Dead Space and Dead Space 2. And, you know, having a couple of tough moments through those games, but overall just being like, you know, this was the right pace, and then playing through them again on the harder. This one I've started playing through on normal mode, and I'm just like... And it gets hard when.
Yeah, this is like, a joke.
Yeah,
but, yeah I mean, and yeah, it's not necessarily bad, but it's just kind of like, you know, the same way that other games have changed their difficulty levels and done things like that. It's sort of that expectation that you have going into it. And I think a large part of that, though, is also the gun crafting system. The gun crafting system, for me, I think is really cool. I like it, but I think it seriously can break the game because you end up with these weapons that are just, I mean, right now I have a plasma cannon thing that with a electric, you know, wire thing that shoots out of it, and nothing can touch me because I can spam the plasma thing, blast everything away from me like within a radius, and just slowly methodically electrocute everything that is, you know, while it's on the ground.
Yeah. And yeah, it's interesting. Like I you got I think 3 extra weapons for playing, like, I don't know, Mass Effect, another EA game, maybe the other 2 titles. And those, I made a conscious decision to not use those because they render the, you know, first third of the game where you're learning the weapon crafting system and gradually building these little, you know, crappy weapons up to sort of more powerful ones, they just render that useless. It's like, here is a weapon called the Planet Cracker. Go ahead. So, of course it's going to, like, shred Necromorphs in 2. So I just left those in the inventory, but I might grab them now since the weapons I have are pretty gnarly. So, one thing, though, they make you use, or they don't make you, but one of my favorite things to do is, you know, slice an arm, one of the blade arms off a necromorph, grab it with telekinesis, and shoot it back to impale them. Why haven't they allowed you to just grab one of those, let's say 1, 2, I don't know, half a dozen of those, and just duct tape them to your gun? Because that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, where's the sort of biological weapon warfare in this? Come on, Isaac, you're an engineer. Like, let's start...
There's not enough mechanical parts involved. He's just like, I don't know what to do with
he's
this
like,
now.
Just shove it in the barrel of it and start.
See,
shooting
this is why his relationship with Ellie failed. He's just like, you're not mechanical. What do I do here?
You're not a robot. So, but yeah, no. It's again, I'm enjoying the game, and I think it appeals to a wider, broader audience, and that's fine. That's okay. I can always go back to Condemned. If I need a scare,
punching hobos,
Hobo Simulator 2007.
Definitely, that was definitely a creepy game with the department store mannequins and the Christmas music and stuff.
Poop your pants,
dude. even the sequel of Condemned up until the point where you went Super Saiyan.
You got magic or whatever. Yeah, I got magic powers.
That was pretty good. But back on Space 3. So okay, so the question of survival horror versus that, you know, there's room for debate. But adding co-op to it, which we've kind of talked about some, and the feeling of, do you have to play through it in co-op? Like, are you missing something if you only play through it in single player?
Well, you're missing those scenes regardless if you're playing as Isaac, because I don't see any weird, you know, illusions.
Yeah, I mean, there's the co-op only missions, which is what Locke's talking about, and I think there's four of them.
Yeah.
To play, and they got some meat to them. I mean, there's no.
It's not no like
payoff.
Yeah, there, like, you like, get some supplies. Like,
yeah, there's some chests at the end, and there's some stuff going on. It's cool from the perspective. It's very different. Like the one mission played with Andrew, I was at Carver, and I was seeing like birthday streamers everywhere, and cakes, and presents, and all this stuff. And he's like, "It's just a warehouse, dude. Like, it's, you know, I don't see any of that stuff." So that's pretty neat. Like, I was like, so we were trying to figure out exactly what the game does. So I'm like, okay, there's a giant 6-foot toy soldier in front of me, stopping me from walking. All right, what do you see? He's like, I see a barrel. Okay, so it's kind of cool, and I don't think any game
that's
has
pretty
really
neat.
Done something
like yeah, that's pretty cool.
Any game has done something like that before. So I mean, major props to them for that. Like technology wise, like I don't know what it takes to do something like that. Because most times, right, levels are identical and you're just positioning. So now you actually have what people are seeing completely different. So that's pretty cool. I think, like I alluded to earlier, I talked about earlier with the cutscene thing, it's a subtle change. But are you really missing anything in that case? Probably not. I think the game feels different in co-op in the sense that it is more action-y. And like, I still feel, especially earlier on in Dead Space 3, like there's that isolationist thing when you're in space and stuff. And
yeah, the zero-G stuff.
Like that,
yeah,
right? And you're by yourself. Like, it's very much, you definitely do get that alone feeling. But in co-op, it's just kind of like, let's show everything off to each other.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I end up doing. Like, oh, look at this over here. Oh, come here, look at this kind of a thing. So it definitely changes the mood of the game.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious to go through it. Like, I don't think I'm curious to go through it solo. I don't think I've, like, soured or, like, ruined my solo experience by playing through it co-op the first time through. But, I mean, I still am going to be, you know, more, I guess, more patient and plodding as I go through, just because, you know, I'll be on a harder difficulty and it'll be, I don't have that extra gun. And, yeah, I'm just curious to see what it's like on my own, because, again, you know, the first two Dead Spaces were very methodical. I was very methodical in my play and style, so, and in this, I'm not. I'm the total opposite. I'm an idiot, and I always have to get revived, and, you know.
Well, can you even get revived? Like,
yeah,
basically just...
you can. There's an option to have revives on. Where
it... And it depends, too, on, yeah, you can still get gibbed. Basically,
oh yeah, if you get blown up, yeah, or if you get like eviscerated,
melted by acid,
you know, spewed on, melted, crushed, sliced, diced, there's a matter of things that will automatically
lovely,
kill you.
Lovely deaths that await you.
Oh, I like getting killed in Dead Space. It's the best death animations in any game. So
they are.
I mean, the work that goes into those is just astounding.
So, to me, like, I've only played through it single player. That's it. I haven't even touched co-op yet. And there's so many moments where I'm playing through it and feel like, what else is going on? Like, knowing that the co-op mode is there, it's like, what else happens in this cutscene? Like, you know, I bump into Carver because this is part of what's scripted. But if I'm walking with him, what happens here? Or if we're going through this mission together, what happens? That's different. Like, you know, that's the interlog and, you know, that kind of thing. And I don't necessarily feel like it sours my single player experience, but I just definitely feel like I think it's good that I have this feeling of what else is there, what more is there, as opposed to just having a second gun, right? Instead of just having a second person there that's playing the game with you, it's, you get a whole kind of new experience from it.
Yeah, I don't think they really changed the dialogue all that much and things like that. Like, if Carver is there, like in the cutscene, like in single player, he'll be there in co-op. he'll just come with you to it and leave with you from it. I guess is the best way to describe it. Like when you meet the whole crew for the first time, right? In single player, Carver goes back to wherever with them, but in
co-op, you hang out. Co-op, yeah,
he just hangs out there with you and then goes with you and so on and so forth. And then you go to that Admiral's quarters with him or whatever, right?
Right.
Carver shows up there anyway to find you, right? Because he calls from the ship or whatever in single player. It's like, all right, I'll come meet you, Isaac, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in co-op, he comes with you too. So, like, it's intelligently written to the point where it's basically the same, but the way the game presents how it happens is just slightly different.
Right.
So, like I said, I think they really nailed it in terms of here's how you add co-op to a single player game and not break the single player.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Good example.
Cool.
Well, that's Dead Space 3. The review is up.
Go really read, well written by Andrew. There was something he mentioned there with the whole survival horror thing, but like Dead Space was more about survival, Dead Space 2 was more about escape, and Dead Space 3 is more about extermination, which I thought was a really good kind of assessment of the three.
Yeah.
So check out the review. Andrew's got some smart words up there. He talks about John Carver's facial scars excellently. And for us, as always, be sure to check out all of our various wonderful things like the iOS and Windows Phone 7 and Android apps. We got them. You want them. They're cool. We still have some shirts up on Split Reason, I think.
Yeah, a few.
That are on sale. Special, limited, one-time offer.
Yeah, limited. They're limited edition with pre-orders only.
Exactly. And please, please, please leave feedback for us on iTunes as always. And you can follow us on Twitter at Cooptimus, COOPTIMUS. And, you know, maybe one of these days one of you guys out there will leave us a voicemail and we can listen to that. That'd be very, very special episode of the Coopticast. 646-926-6748. 646-926-6748. For myself, Nick, Locke, the illest, Mike Katsifrakis. Thank you all. Have a good one.
Just doing God's work.